This is Mitch Easter of Let's Active, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Wave Farms WGXC needs your financial support. In these extraordinary and unprecedented times, we know there are many worthy organizations in need. We hope that you consider Wave Farm among them. If you value WGXC and want to keep it a part of your daily life, we ask that you make a tax-deductible contribution to keep local and adventurous content freely available on the Upper Hudson Valley radio dial. Please visit WGXC.org, click Donate, and become a monthly sustaining supporter, or make a one-time donation. Thank you so much for keeping independent voices and sounds on your radio dial.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Green, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Rodney Shop in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the bids to demolish the former Greene County Jail have come in at about half of the anticipated costs, Legislature Chairperson Patrick Linger said. The county request for bids was released July 8th, and the specs included asbestos abatement, demolition and courthouse protection, as well as an alternative for the removal of the historic Ohio sandstone on the exterior of the building. 12 bids were received, Linger said August 15th. Lawmakers will determine who will be awarded the contract at a special meeting of the legislature's Public Safety Committee on August 17th. Quote, "We got a lot more than we thought we were going to get," unquote, Linger said, referring to the bids. Quote, "The more bidders you get, the better pricing you get," unquote. The county legislature budgeted $800,000 for the demolition. The bids submitted are still under review by county officials and the project engineers to determine the lowest bidder and to ensure that the contractor's plans meet all of the bid specs, Linger said. Built in 1908, the county jail and sheriff's office on Bridge Street in the village of Catskill are listed on both the state and national historic registries. The county courthouse was also built in 1908 using the same unique Ohio sandstone, according to a report by the Dutch American Architecture Group. An evaluation by the group in collaboration with Historic Catskill suggests the Bridge Street Jail may be the last of its kind. The State Historic Preservation Office recommended the county explore alternatives to tearing down the structure, but the county rejected the options, arguing they were too expensive. The historic carriage house on the property will not be destroyed. Demolition is expected to begin this fall and be completed by December, Linger said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Amanda Fries is reporting for the Times Union that a federal judge August 14th dismissed a lawsuit filed by the National Rifle Association against the state of New York and Governor Andrew Cuomo over the closure of gun shops at the height of the coronavirus pandemic. The NRA argued in the complaint it filed in early April that the closure of the state's gun shops during the pandemic amounted to, quote, "a pointless and arbitrary attack on the constitutional rights of New York citizens and residents," unquote. U.S. District Court Judge May A. DeAgostino determined the NRA failed to prove that fielding calls and questions from members following the state's decision to shutter gun shops caused a, quote, "perceptible impairment," unquote, and said the nonprofit failed to provide specific facts to support its assertions. In its original complaint, the NRA claimed the state's decision to not include gun shops, weapon distributors, and shooting ranges in its list of essential businesses violated the Second, Fifth, and Fourteenth Amendments. Richard Azzopardi, spokesperson for Governor Cuomo, applauded the court's decision. Quote, "It's no surprise that yet another frivolous suit by the NRA has been laughed out of court," unquote, he said. Quote, "Their brand of destructive political games are bad enough in normal times and are completely beyond the pale during the pandemic," unquote. NRA officials were not available for comment. Read the full story in the Times Union. And Paul Kirby is reporting for the Daily Freeman that the Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan announced August 15th that a countywide rapid response plan is under development to begin with the reopening of schools located in the county in September and October. In a press release, county officials said the five-part plan will focus on setting guidelines for proper screening and testing processes, investigating positive cases through contact tracing, offering support for school-specific isolation plans, establishing a communications plan between the county and individual school districts, and providing personal protective equipment for students and faculty. The county will provide nearly 30,000 masks for students and staff at school districts planning on opening, and public health nurses will be placed on standby to support the districts and to respond to potential clusters and other health-related scenarios. Ulster County is currently in the process of finalizing plans to test all school staff prior to schools reopening for in-person instruction. Ryan met last week with school superintendents from all nine districts located within the county to discuss the rapid response plan. As of August 15th, Ulster County reported 96 active cases and a total of 93 deaths from coronavirus. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org. National Weather Service in Albany predicts scattered showers on Sunday. There's a 30% chance of rain, mainly after 4 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies are forecast with a high of 73. Sunday night, a low around 58 is forecast, again with a 30% chance of rain. Monday, isolated showers are possible, possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with a high of 74 and a low around 59. Tuesday should be mostly sunny with a high of 77 and a low around 55. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Radio for open ears. Call the WGXC feedback line anytime, 518-291-9492. If you have something to say about something you heard on WGXC, give us a call. Write it audio letter to the editor. Call in at 518-291-9492. Leave a 3-minute message and we'll play it back on All Together Now. That's 518-291-9492. To leave an audio letter to the editor at 518-291-9492. WGXC at 518-291-9492.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Sabisha Friedberg of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Info, music, signals, news, fun and frolic, and emergency instructions.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
सर पे डाले है ये चुनिया क्यों हाँ क्यों हो सोनी सोनी सी कुड़ी नो मौज में रहने देना दुनिया क्यों हाँ दुनिया क्यों है किन्नी शानदार कुड़ी ये कर देगी कमाल इसे झूमने दे अपनी बीट दे कुड़ी नो नचने दे हाँ नचने दे तू आज लगाने दे ठुमके हाँ चुमके नचने दे सारे फिक्रा नू छड़ के बंधन के कुड़ी नू नचने दे नचने दे आज लगाने दे ढूंढके हाँ चमके कुड़ी नू नचने दे हाँ नचने दे सारे फिक्रा नू छड़ के बंधन के कुड़ी नू नचने दे
छोटी छोटी सोच क्यों है जी ओ हो पाजी ओ उखड़े उखड़े क्यों खड़े जी हंसता तो हंस देगी दुनिया भी हाँ जी ओ आए जो ऑन द फ्लोर कुड़ी तो खूब मचाए शोर तू भी चूम लेना इसकी बीट दे कुड़ी नू नचने दे हाँ नचने दे तू आज लगाने रे ढूंढके हाँ जमके कुड़ी नू नचने दे हाँ नचने दे तू सारे या फिक्रा नू छड़ के बन घन के कुड़ी नू नचने नचने दे नचने दे आज लगाने रे ढूंढके हाँ जमके कुड़ी नू नचने
I love books. Do you love books? Books are great. Read more books. Listen to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM. Hooray!
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a graduate of Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I am Mishuda. I am 18 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena at NC Smith.
I'm Fatia, and I'm 6 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're going to be joined by our friend Fahim shortly. And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate. I completely zoned out there for a second.
So who would like to get us started?
Yeah, I'm going to get the books. I'm going to get my books first.
What book do you have to share today, Fatia?
This is the picture. She draw a rainbow book. And do you want to tell what happened, book?
What the time does hearts and trees and a big rainbow flying tree and a pizza and a lollipop.
A lollipop.
And house with a tree on top. It's a wrap. And that's all. It's quick. It's really quick.
So you created the book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the book she created.
It's the book that I created.
What inspired you to write that book or to draw that book?
So what inspired me was my mind. I think this book and I made it spark early. Eli Fatia's.
So the binder inspired her to create a rainbow and a lot of trees.
And a pizza.
I just want to eat it.
Well, I especially liked the part with the pizza. And the trees were really cool, too. I mean, I liked all of it, but the pizza was a surprise. I like when books have little surprising elements in them. Thank you for sharing your book, Fatia.
You're welcome.
Mishuda, did you have a book you wanted to share?
Yeah, I have a book, I Was Here, by Gail Forman. I just found the book on the library, and I started reading it a little bit, and I'm going to read it more. But, like, you know, I Was Here, you could take it, like, so many ways. Like, I Was Here, meaning you could take it in a, like, depressing way, or, like, I Was Just Here, you know, you write it in a shirt, like, I Was Here at this specific place. But so far from reading this book, like, I Was Here takes a very deep and just, like, suicidal meaning to it. Because, like, her friend, you know, her friend, like, she's depressed and she comes to suicide by drinking industrial cleaner on a motel. And then she discovers what happened, like, why she did that. She was actually getting, you know, bullied by her old roommate. And the friend finds out that the suicide might not be a suicide because, you know, she finds more to it. And then the story, you know, and then it takes, like, and like her journey of taking the revenge of her friend and finding justice for her friend and how she copes with it. Because, you know, she didn't, first of all, she thought like it didn't hit her that much, but then as she was discovering the mystery, like, you know, it's hitting more. So I'm excited to read and find out what happens.
That sounds really interesting and maybe a little heavy, but
yeah. I think like, I don't know, like, I didn't read any of her book, but just like judging by the book, which I shouldn't have done, it has like, if I stay or I have lost my way, it's like both of the title have like two, in my opinion, have like very different opinions, and it could take it like very positive way and also very negative, if that makes sense. Yeah,
I read If I Stay a long time ago, and it wasn't a light read, but it was a very interesting, and it was a nice read, even though it had some tough topics. It was really sad, but it wasn't a hard read, but it was a sad read, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I hope you continue to enjoy that book. How about Amelia? Do you have a book to share?
Yeah. I'm still reading the collection of short horror stories from over there, but I've also like remembered something from when I was really little, a comic I used to read, which I found out very recently was actually inspired by a book series, and that the comic did not come first. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of Witch and Wizard by James Patterson. I have no idea what this is about, because I remember having the comic, and I vaguely remember the covers of both of these books as I look at them on my phone, but I think I only read the comic, and that's all I remember from it. So I actually have no idea what Witch and Wizard is about, but I have these vague memories of it. So I don't know if any of you have ever heard of this story.
I have heard about the story, Amelia.
I just thought it was interesting because I was so sure that this was a comic series and that it could not have ever been anything else. But it turns out the larger story is actually a series of books. And I guess there are more comics as well. So I thought that was interesting.
Do you remember what the series is about?
No, because looking back, I don't even think I was reading the first in the comic series. I think I was reading like the second book. So I had a very warped idea of what this story was about. I basically read this story in all the wrong ways.
I wonder if I can get a description. James Patterson writes primarily for adults, but he does have a few series that are for younger readers. That was one of them that was very popular, the Witch and Wizard series, and then Maximum Ride, which I think somebody talked about wanting to read.
Me?
As Lena?
When we brought him on the show that one time.
Yeah, and I think there's comics of that as well, but I'm not positive. I might be making that up. But I could read a description of Witch and Wizard number one. The world is changing. The government has seized control of every aspect of society, and now kids are disappearing. For 15-year-old Wisty and her older brother Wit, life turns upside down when they are hauled out of bed one night, separated from their parents, and thrown into a secret compound for no reason they can comprehend. The new government is clearly trying to suppress life, liberty, and the pursuit of being a normal teenager. Imprisoned together and condemned to death, Wisty and Wit begin exhibiting strange abilities and powers they never dreamed of. Maybe there is a reason they were singled out. Can this newly discovered witch and wizard master their skills in time to save themselves, their parents, and maybe the world? My guess is they do.
I'm guessing they do. I'm just surprised that the girl is supposed to be 15.
Did she read older to you or younger?
She looked older in the illustrations. She looked like an adult. But I don't know. Maybe that's the way they drew the girls in that book. I don't know.
That happens sometimes. Both in comics and in TV shows too. I feel like often high schoolers are cast, like the people that are cast to play teenagers are often in their 20s.
Oh yeah, teenagers are always played by adults in movies.
It becomes shocking when they are actually played by teenagers.
Mm-hmm. But then sometimes that doesn't even matter, because I don't know if you've ever seen the cast of like anything like Stranger Things or It. But Finn Wolfhard looks like he's like older than me, and I know he's not. So I don't know what's in the water in Hollywood, but those kids like grow like 20 years in like 1 year. I don't know.
Who knows? The special sparkly water of fame. Who knows? All right. So, Fahim, do you have a book you wanted to talk about today?
So, I'm reading, I've read, three books so far, but, two of those books are about myths, about, cultural myths. But, they're in the library, so I need them to describe how they are, because they're kind of, different than other books. So, but, I'm reading this book. It's, I know Amelia has read, all the series, Cold Wings of Fire, but it's, the graphic novel version.
I can't even say I've read all the series anymore, because I could not get myself to enjoy Dragon Slayer. I could not make myself enjoy a book about humans in a series that was completely about dragons.
Yeah.
So it's funny, the Legends series, which only has two books in it, and are pretty much just extra stories. One of them is my favorite book in the entire franchise, and the other is my least favorite book in the entire franchise.
Yeah. So I just started from the first book. That was the first graphic novel. I don't know if Amelia has read the graphic novel version, but I don't know if it's different or what, because I didn't read the chapter book. But the first book is called The Dragon Eye Prophecy. It's basically similar to the chapter version of this. It's about five dragons with a prophecy that they have to fulfill to end the war. And they just take adventures and stuff to know about other dragons and other clans and stuff, to see to see the world, because they have been living in a cave for a lot of years. They have been growing up there. They have to, and then they just start exploring their parents. They don't know who their actual parents are. So they're just in an adventure to see the world and see if they can stop the problem that is occurring in their society.
The comic was very, very faithful to the actual book. So all three of, I think there might be four out now, but I haven't read the fourth one, but all three were very faithful to their actual book.
I actually read a book that's a graphic novel, it's a middle grade graphic novel, that a very small moment in the book has the characters bonding over their love of dragon books. And I thought of Amelia. But it's a very small moment, so it's not a spoiler. But the book I read is Shirley and Jamila Save Their Summer by Gillian Gurz. I'm not sure if I'm saying the author's name right. And this is the first in a series, which is exciting because I really liked it a lot. And so the main characters are Jamila Wahid and Shirley Bones. And Jamila is new to the neighborhood and she's not looking forward to her summer because she's new to the neighborhood, so she doesn't have any friends yet. And she's scheduled to go to a science camp, which she is not looking forward to because all she wants to do is play basketball all summer because she loves basketball. And then she meets Shirley Bones, who is an unusual young woman that lives in the neighborhood who's the same age as her. They're both 10. And they manage to sort of team up and get their parents to agree that they can both not go to the camps that they're supposed to go to. And instead, they'll hang out at the basketball court together. And they have sort of an agreed upon plan of where they can be at all times so that their parents feel okay leaving them alone. And as they get to know each other, Jamila realizes that Shirley has some skills in deduction, that she's a bit of a detective. And that's something that people know about her. So they often come to her looking to help solve sort of the mini mysteries of childhood. But it also kind of leaves her as an outsider because she's a bit different. And she's often telling people things about themselves that they find creepy because it's how do you know this? Or maybe it's information that they don't want known or don't want to know. So she's a bit of an outsider, but she and Jamila become friends and solve a little mystery along the way. So it's fun because it's, a couple young ladies both getting to know each other, but also solving a crime. And so you get to, or a mystery, I should say. I won't say crime. They're solving a mystery and helping out neighbors. And it's a fun introduction because you get to know the characters while they're getting to know each other. And then the mystery's fun, and it's a graphic novel, so the way they kind of show the different clues and how she's figuring things out from what she's seeing is done interestingly in the graphic novel. So it's very fun. Highly suggest it to anyone that likes middle grade graphic novels.
Sounds like a good book.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I would definitely read the second one when it comes out, which I don't know when that is, but this just came out recently, so probably be a little while. But again, that's Shirley and Jamila Save Their Summer by Gillian Gurz, or something like that. I need to figure out how to say her name. How I usually find out people's name is by trying to find an interview with them or a, a video where they say their name. They'll be like, hi, my name is blank. And then you're like, that's how you pronounce it. Yeah. Maggie Stiefvater. I forget how the song went. Stiefvater.
Steve, like the name. That's all I remember. Otter, like the animal, Stiefvater.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I will never forget that song.
That was a good song.
Yeah.
I don't have a song for my name, but I have a way of learning my name that one of my board members at the library taught me. So my last name is Shemitis, which is often pronounced wrong by many people. I've even pronounced it wrong before, and which is fair because I married into the name. But one of my board members at the library, when she first met me, remembered it by saying Shemitis at the park, Shemitis at the library. So it's like she'll meet us, but Shemitis. So Shemitis, there you go. It's not Comedes. It's not Shemitis. It's not Chamides. Fun times. Does anyone have anything else that they're excited for this week?
I'm excited for something.
What's that?
I'm excited for today because I'm having a sleepover with my friend today, and I'm very excited because we are going to go to her house, and she has a new cat because one of her cats died.
Aww.
And we're excited to get to know her.
That's fun. So you get to meet the new cat. Is it a kitten?
Yeah. No.
It's a big cat? Medium cat.
No. Just small one.
Cool. I would like to meet a kitten. Sounds fun. Does anyone else have anything exciting going on?
No.
No. That's fair. I don't know if I have anything exciting going on. I've been having some fun cooking and trying out new recipes, in part because we have a lot of zucchini. We're growing zucchini, and every once in a while we'll have like a bunch of huge ones, and then once we're starting to finally like get to the bottom of the zucchini pile, then all of a sudden I realize that there's like three or four new huge ones on the plant. So it's like the gift that keeps on giving, but it means you have to get creative about how you make your zucchini. But it's fun. I like trying out new things. I like cooking. And this is the best time of year to cook because you have all the fresh produce. Mm-hmm. So that's
fun. My parents are growing a little tomato plant on our deck.
That's nice. Yeah, we have some cherry tomatoes. They're fun to just pop in as a snack.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else have anything they want to share before we go?
I do.
What's that, Fatia?
Supplies for my pencil.
Oh, for her pencil supplies.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so they don't get lost.
So she's getting organized.
Yeah.
I like doing that too.
Oh, she's using her rainbow cup to organize her pencils and pens.
And I like a lot of
that. So what recipes are you trying, Miss Emily?
I've been trying out all sorts of different recipes. This weekend I made a sweet potato, lentil, and zucchini curry that was very good. And then I also made a blueberry and cherry compote with a no-bake crumble that was a dessert. And that was very good. And we needed to use up some fruit that was not getting any fresher. So, and the zucchini as well, as I mentioned. So both very tasty. I mostly look up recipes online, but I do have some cookbooks too that I often make things from. And then actually I made two recipes that I found online, and then it turns out they have a cookbook that they wrote. So I put in an order for that at the library so I can borrow that from the library, check out some more recipes, see some pretty pictures.
And I'm also trying new recipes. I mostly make the recipes on my own. I just like to try new things. So yesterday, you know, there was leftover spinach, which was, you know, rotting and it was going bad. So I made pasta with, you know, egg pasta. And then I fried up some shrimp with like all the spices. And I made a pasta and then with mango smoothie. Ooh. With just mangoes and milk. And yeah, it was good.
Sounds very nice.
But this thing was amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
My husband often teases me when I call food delicious. So he thinks it's funny the way that I say things are delicious, which I don't think is that funny, but it's okay. I don't mind. But anyways, I'm glad your food was amazing.
Oh, amazing.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time for today, but we hope everyone listening has a great week and reads lots of good books and meets lots of good cats and organizes some stuff and makes some good recipes. Have a great week. Happy reading.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Good evening. And today, I'm on the phone with activist Louis Bembo of the Troy Black Lives. And our discussion topic today will be about Black Augurs. Now, Louis, we just had a successful celebration nationwide of Juneteenth. And we also had a big celebration or a protest in Troy for Black Lives Matter. And now we are in August, Black August. So, Luz, what I'm trying to get some information on is, what is Black August?
Sure. Well, I'm going to first start and say my name is Luz Marquez-Bembo.
Okay.
And I am part of an amazing group called Troy for Black Lives. Many folks listening will remember us as Justice for Damik, who was a young man who was who police attempted to kill, back in 2017. And since then, we've been organizing to bring justice to Damik, as well as to Edson Debenin, who police did kill in 2016. Black August is, for those of us who have been organizing in revolutionary spaces, in spaces known as critical resistance, in spaces known as Black Pan-Africanist, and spaces that are emboldened to uplift what it really means to organize for Black lives, as a time to remember George Jackson specifically, but also the many other revolutionaries who were either born or have been killed in August, as well as revolutionary times of liberation for Black people, like the Haitian Revolution. And so Black August, unlike Black History Month, unlike Juneteenth, is really a time for us to sit, to reflect, to learn, to really organize around principles of unity, what it means to self-sacrifice, and to really educate ourselves around critical resistance for Black people in the U.S. Mm-hmm.
So, Lusa, Black August, it isn't something that was started a long time ago. It was something that was created through the Black Lives Matter struggle?
No, Black August was created way before Black Lives Matter. You know, it's interesting because the term and the movement as we know it in this moment of Black Lives really came out of Patricia Cuthers and Aliza Garza, and other Black femme and Black trans community and leaders. But this notion of Black Lives Mattering goes way back to the 60s and the 70s of the Black Power Movement. And so Black August was really out of the killing of George Jackson around 1971. Mm-hmm. While he had been in prison as a young person for stealing $70 for someone, and was sentenced to 1 year and life in prison, which is a whole different conversation. But in 1971, he was assassinated in prison. While he was in prison, he spent his time learning about critical resistance, Black critical resistance. So that is learning about Assata Shakur, learning about Angela Davis, learning about the Black Panther movement, learning about the Young Lord movement, learning about movements that were not too different from civil rights movement, but were about us taking back what we deserve at any means necessary, by any means necessary. And so we really owe it to George Jackson's life and his study of the 70s. And then when brothers and sisters started investigating it more, they were like, oh my God, the Haitian Revolution was in August, and all of these other amazing people that we know from Hampton have a birthday in August. And so, hence Black August, it's very reminiscent with the golden era also of the hip hop movements of social and political hip hop. And so, no, this isn't something that's new. I think folks celebrating it is spreading like wildfire because we're in a critical moment right now of Black Lives Rising, to demand an end to police brutality, to demand an end of the prison industrial complex, to demand an end to the killing of Black bodies, whether they be Black trans, Black women, Black young people, Black men, out in the streets as if we're disposable.
The George Jackson killing, that was the time when Angela Davis became known, right? I mean, known a lot.
But yes, it was around that time that the U.S. put out a warrant for her arrest.
Right, I understand.
And they began, she had to go into hiding. And if folks want to study that more, they can learn that more. But I wouldn't study it from sort of mainstream sources. This is a time for us to really look at the sources that come from critical resistance, that come from Black Pan-Africanist Black leaders, like Angela Davis's books, like if you start studying around George Jackson, you will see that there is a connection to George Jackson because his nephew goes in to free him. They're called the Soledad Brothers.
Right.
If you read George Jackson's acclaimed book, Soledad Brothers, you get to read many of his letters. And in that, his nephew, George Jackson Jr., tries Jonathan Jackson. Actually, it's his brother. I'm so sorry. Jonathan Jackson tries to free the Soledad Brothers, of which George Jackson is one. And the guns that he used on that day were bought and owned for by the revolutionary Angela Davis. And so they begin a whole, trying to warrant for her arrest and looking for her. And that's when she goes into hiding and so forth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that, I looked up some of the information that Black August is nationwide, you know, and it's all on the web. And I know that, but it wasn't celebrated in the North as it was in the South, was it?
You know, that's a good question. And I guess I think the thing about that Black August is different from Juneteenth and it's different from February, Black History Month, because it is very much rooted in organizing around the prison industrial complex. It is around the focus of the criminal justice system and its attempt to ending violence.
Right.
So how do you use violence to end violence? It doesn't work. If it did, it would have worked a long time ago. Many of us who know the history and predominantly the history in the South of the criminal justice system is to find Black runaway slaves. I mean, that just is the history. And it's not just the history of law enforcement, it's the history of vigilantism, and I'm so sorry because I speak English as a second language, but people would come in and round off, you know, so you see the history of what does it mean to be a bondsman person, you know, when you can find pictures of runaway slaves connected to, in those times, thousands of dollars, you know, even when we think of Harriet Tubman. You know, there were thousands of dollars to find Harriet Tubman, you know. And so all of that is about the roots of critical resistance in Black August. And so that is very different than the history, which I think many of us in the North are much more connected to, which is the civil rights movement.
Right.
And I would offer to folks listening that the Black Lives Matter movement is not just the U.S. Movement, while it was started in the U.S., it has gone global, and so has Black August. In other words, much of what we're seeing across the country are people learning about the Black Lives Resistance, the Black August Resistance, the difference between what is critical resistance and what is civil rights, the difference between what is self-sacrifice and what it is to do peaceful, nonviolence tactics. You know, and so for many of us, going back to the 60s and the 70s, and mostly the 70s, is really critical as we move forward into reimagining what this world could be like if we defund or reinvest funding in Black communities.
Right, okay. And Luz, what are some of the activities that will be going on?
Sure, thank you for asking. And so this Friday in Troy, New York, where I live, which is just right outside of Albany, New York, for those who are listening from afar, we're actually holding a teach-in because we believe in, we don't have to start this from scratch. Our leaders like George Jackson and many left us tools and tactics. And one of the things they talk about is Freedom Summer. And so we're going to have a Freedom Summer series throughout the rest of August. This Friday from 6 to 9, right down on 6th Ave, around Central New York, around Central, North Central, we will, well, it's not North Central, but right around Central, we will be having a gathering to do a teaching, talk about who we are, talk about Black August. It's important that our people understand what Black August is about. We believe that the more we empower and educate our people, that that is about freedom and that is about critical resistance. And we also believe that there's a connection between that and ending the everyday violence that occurs in our communities. So join us, if you can, from 6 to 9.
In the Sanctuary for Independent Media?
Yep. And then on August 21st, I believe it is, the Sanctuary for Independent Media is hosting a people's clinic at Freedom Square. The people's clinic is a collaboration between the Sanctuary for Independent Media, Dr. Francis Coughlin, and JJ. I can't remember JJ's name. And numerous collaborators such as Troy for Black Lives. I believe Troy Snug is a partner. Urban Grief is a partner. And a few other groups. And they've come together to really look at what does it mean to have a people's clinic using the model that the Black Panther movement and the Young Lord movement created when they took over a clinic in the Bronx, an abandoned clinic in the Bronx, and began to provide support and assistance to people needing health and folks who were addicts. And so we are joining that on August 21st. It is from about the same time, 6 to 9, at the Freedom Square.
Okay. All right, Luz. Luz, I want to thank you for coming on, you know, and giving us this brief historical information about Black August. So thanks again.
Absolutely. And I also want to encourage people to come out and to learn about other movements.
Right.
Because we have a plethora of, like, there's so many movements for us right. to choose from. And so thank you for pointing that out, indeed.
All right. Thanks, Luz.
Yeah, thank you. Take care. Right now.
We're joined by Dave Ellis of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition, which just had a big success in the city of Rensselaer. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thanks for having me.
So the DEC just denied two essential permits for a new waste facility in the city of Rensselaer to move forward. What was that facility?
It's the BioHiTech. It's a waste-to-energy facility that was slated to be constructed in the city's southern industrial area. It's on the old BASF site, which is a toxic brownfield that's directly next to the Hudson River.
And you've been against this project from the beginning. You know, what were your concerns with the project?
Our group was very concerned about the proximity to the river and what types of waste would be brought into the facility. The facility would be built in an area that used to be a 100-year floodplain, which in today's world, it could even be less than that with rising sea levels. So we were very concerned about any types of leachate from the facility, which is basically garbage juice that could be leached into the Hudson River, also just piercing the cap of the brownfield site and disturbing the toxic chemicals that are already in the ground. They would have dug huge pits to construct this facility. So that was one of the major concerns, was any of those poisonous chemicals getting out into the neighborhood and into the city.
So BioHiTech had applied for DEC permits for both state air quality and solid waste management. And they interestingly demanded an immediate decision from the DEC on their application. And the DEC has made their decision. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so the DEC basically sent them a 10-page letter denying their application for these permits. They had many concerns. Actually, last year when the previous mayor was still in office, DEC sent him a letter with concerns, basically calling out the City of Rensselaer Planning Commission for their poor decision. They had declared a negative declaration for a full environmental review, and DEC slammed the city for that. DEC has been hearing the concerns of the community all along. They heard from the county legislature that passed a moratorium. They've heard from Riverkeeper. So this is a group effort, and basically DEC heard everybody's voices, and they basically told BioHiTech that they are not meeting the guidelines, and their application basically is rejected at this point of time.
So the project is halted, but it may not be permanently stopped. What do you think BioHiTech's next move will be?
So BioHiTech has an attorney, Tom West. He actually was against the county's moratorium on solid waste siting within a mile of Hudson River. And I actually spoke at a county legislature meeting, and Tom West was very adamant that this facility was going to go forward. And he had already told the Times Union that they plan on basically going against DEC's decision, and they plan on fighting back to still have this facility here in the city. Now, the application on file with the City of Rensselaer had also expired, so basically BioHiTech will be starting from ground zero and starting all over again with their whole application process. And we plan on keep fighting it, and basically make our voices known that they are not welcome here in the City of Rensselaer.
It's interesting that you brought up the county moratorium on new solid waste facilities. That was a major question when BioHiTech first proposed this facility there, because it seems like it's a new solid waste facility. Was that a question of whether it could even be legal in the county ever resolved?
Well, Tom West, the attorney for BioHiTech, tried to claim that the county could not basically tell city-level government what they can and cannot do. The solid waste moratorium was supposed to be for all of Rensselaer County. It would prohibit any types of trash recycling-type facilities from developing within 1 mile of the Hudson River. And that moratorium was supposed to impact BioHiTech, but again, Tom West claimed it wouldn't work. I'm not sure of the legalities of that, or if it would or would not work, but hopefully it would have some type of an impact on them moving forward with their process and make it much more harder for them to do so.
And so it seems like BioHiTech has been stopped for now, though residents are still aware of the situation. Can you give us an update while you're here, Dave, on the Dunn landfill?
Sure. So the Dunn landfill had recently installed a new gas collection system that was supposed to stop almost all odors. They paid a lot of money for this new system, and odors had started to dissipate slightly, but residents that live in the East Greenbush Governor Square neighborhood, just east of the landfill property, are still experiencing odors, so the system clearly is not working. I also believe that there has been a reduction of complaints because the school has been closed down for so long, and a lot of complaints were coming from students and faculty and staff. Right now, the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition is working on new efforts against the Dunn landfill. We did some testing in the wintertime for any possible contaminants surrounding the landfill property, and we found that there was in three different water bodies, we found that there was PFAS contamination. We all know with the problems we're having with Norlite that PFAS is a very toxic chemical. We believe that this chemical may be coming from the landfill, and we asked the DEC to test the leachate on site, which now apparently they are going to start testing at all landfill facilities. But the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition plans on doing more types of testing. We also plan on doing a press release coming up very soon with more information on moving forward against this facility.
Is there anything else, Dave, that I haven't asked you that you would like to talk about for either BioHiTech, the DEC's response to BioHiTech, or the Dunn landfill?
We're willing to work with the DEC and any other regulatory agencies to make sure that these environmental injustices are taken care of in our communities. The people of Rensselaer deserve better. We are not a wealthy community, and it seems like we're often taken advantage of by these different types of polluting industries. And it's unfortunate. People do not have the money to fight back. They do not have the means to hire an attorney. They don't have the time. And it's just very disheartening. So we're willing to work with any regulatory agencies to make sure that these facilities are operating 100%, that they are in compliance with all state laws and all local laws, and that they are not impacting our community. We'd like DEC to have a stricter enforcement on the Dunn landfill. They have done right now with the BioHiTech, and it's great to see them finally coming forward and showing that they care about the city of Rensselaer. We'd like them to do the same with the Dunn landfill. It continues to impact our community, and it's just important that their permit is not renewed in 2022 without public hearings. DEC needs to come forward. They need to listen to our community, and action needs to be taken on all environmental injustices.
This has been Dave Ellis of the Rensselaer Environmental Coalition. Dave, how can people get in touch with the coalition and learn more about BioHiTech and the Dunn landfill?
We have a brand new website that will be launching very soon. It's RensselaerEnvironmentalCoalition.org, or you can go to StopDunn.org. It's the same exact website. They will be going live soon. For now, they can go to